Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 43 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have an interview with an owner desperately seeking her stolen dog.
And I'll never give up looking for Alfie, and I'll never give up looking for any of these dogs on our site.
We have two-minute fiction called Strategy.
If we were in the house and Hercules heard a suspicious noise outside, he would immediately become silent. He would merge into the shadows and not even tap his claws on the floor. It was like he was trying to hide from any baddies who might be around.
And we have the Dogcast Radio News, and I consider author Stephen Bujanski's radical opinion on dogs. But before all that, we have an interview with a talented young junior handler. In our last episode, Judy Kennan-Ray gave us a great profile of the flat-coated retriever. But Judy isn't the only dog enthusiast in the family. Her daughter Jasmine is proving extremely successful in the show ring. Of course, success is often brought about by an early start, and Jasmine couldn't have got a much earlier one.
Yes, I have. I actually went to my first show when I was only like a couple of months old. Ever since like I could walk, I've been like having a dog on the lead, running around the ring, and just, you know, always loved to practice and stuff. And when I was seven, I started the junior handling. So.
And you're the third generation now, aren't you, of handlers?
Yeah, well, of dog showing, probably the second, because my grandpa was more into the retrieving. He didn't really show. He sent mum off to show. But, yeah, dogs has been in our life for generations, so.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you say you started at seven, and you've been very successful since then, haven't you?
Yes, I've been lucky enough to do quite well in the state final, which is a competition where it's the biggest competition in Victoria, because it's the one where you can qualify to compete against the other states and then, if you're lucky enough, go to Crufts. And I've been lucky enough to do, I've won the state final and I've come runner-up in the state final twice, and I've had a good run. But I love it. I just love it.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So what does junior handling actually involve? What do you have to do?
Well, there's like sort of, there is actually like a handbook thing that has rules in it, and it's about presenting the dog to the best it can be presented, but it's judging the handler. So there's rules like the handler can't get in between the dog and the judge, so the judge always has clear view of the dog, and there's like, you know, different, I guess you could say, ways to handle different dogs and different breeds and stuff, and the judges should be aware of this, and you should be performing to the way that they should be handled.
So, for example, I guess it's different if you're handling a Chihuahua than if you're handling a Great Dane.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so, there's different ways to mouth the dogs, and it's just different ways to present it, I guess.
So it's possible then, with every different breed that you show, you have to learn a whole new set of ways to behave with them.
Yeah, a lot of the dogs can be similar in the way you show them. Like the gun dogs, like with the setters, you show each setter the same and stuff. But definitely when you're showing, like, because I show things from like setters and springers and retrievers and like group three dogs, and then I show like Dalmatians and Canterriers and stuff, and it's just so different. You've got to keep learning and keep taking what people are telling you, and just all different.
So are any of the dogs that you handle yours?
The only dogs we own are the flat-coated retrievers, but I have owned Canterriers. But, I just grew up with the flats and I just love them. So I own flats myself, but I just handle other people's breeds.
Oh, right, so you do handle for other people?
Yeah. That's what I mainly do, besides handling my own dogs.
Right. Okay, and, I mean, how long do you get to meet the dog before you actually show them? You know, how much of a relationship do you need to build up with that dog?
It really depends. Different breeds are really different. But I do have, like, regular breeds that I show, and so I sort of have formed a relationship with different dogs. But, yeah, like, a flat coat, they're kind of like the dogs that any of my friends who also do handling can, if I'm maybe not there at the show, they can, like, help my mum and show them, because the flat coats just love everybody, whereas you might get other breeds, like the Weimaraners that I show. I've formed a relationship with one of the dogs because I regularly show that dog, but it's not really a breed that anyone can just randomly come up and show straight away.
Yeah,
like, you sort of need to get to know the dogs, and they're like one people dogs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, and do you do, when we were at Crufts, we saw that some of the junior handlers were doing this competition where you've only met the dog very briefly before, and then you sort of, you've got to show a dog, and you don't know in advance what breed it is and things like that. Have you done any of that?
Yeah, that's like, in our state final we do that. You go in with the dog of your choice, and then they have four finalists, and those four finalists get chosen, and they get taken out of the ring for about, like, I'd say about 15 minutes, where they meet a different dog, like a swap dog, that they have no idea what it is before that, and they get, like, 15 minutes to work with this dog and the owner to teach them how to do it. But the owner would have to be all right with it, and the dogs would have to, you know.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put the dog in there if it wasn't all right with it, and
So that's really thinking on your feet, though, isn't it? Because you've got to get to know this dog and sort of remember how to present it, and there's a lot of things going on there, aren't there?
Yeah, because the first year I got pulled out, like, as a finalist in the state final, I got a Staffordshire Bull Terrier, and I had never shown one. I was like, I had no idea what to do. But the lady who owned the dog was fortunately, like, a very good handler, and she had much experience. Like, she knew how to, the junior handlers, like, thought and stuff. And so she knew exactly what to teach me, and went over and over it, and I was, that's one of the years I came runner-up, so... Yeah, I'd never handled it before, and it was just like, it was such a difference compared to, like, what I usually was handling, and it was just...
And what breed, I mean, I know it's difficult to choose, but if you, is there a breed that is your favourite to handle?
Well, besides the flat coats, because I am, I love my own breed, but besides the flat coats, I love handling Dalmatians and Weimaraners.
And why is that?
I guess you could say that I love big dogs, to say big dogs better than small dogs. These dogs, like, they feel so flashy when you've got them, and you feel like you really stand out, and, yeah, they're just great dogs to work with, I guess.
Is there any breed that you haven't worked with yet that you'd like to do?
Well, there's a lot of dogs in the utility group around here. Like, I haven't really worked with, like, the Mastiffs and Boxers and, like, the dogs like that. I haven't, like, I normally just stay around the gun dog and, like, non-sporting and stuff. But I haven't, I don't really work with a lot of small dogs either. I normally stick to the big dogs, but I do handle Canterriers because I've got a Canterrier.
Bit more bending down, I would imagine, with that.
Yeah, it is. And because I'm quite tall, it's like a lot of people prefer to see me in handlers and stuff with big dogs, and I always get told that I suit big dogs more. So I guess, and growing up with them, I guess I just sort of stuck with them.
Yeah.
But I still like showing the little dogs from time to time.
So what's next for you in junior handling? What have you got planned this year, or perhaps, you know, next year in the future?
Well, I'm still competing, but they have changed the system here, because we used to have, like, qualifying heats through the year and then have one final at the end, which was the state final. But now they've changed it to, like, a point score sort of thing. So we still have heats, but you get points for coming first, second and third. But I'm still competing. I'm still out there every week, and I'm still loving it. So I'm not getting sick of it or anything. And mum's like not making me go or anything. I'm really like deciding whether I want to or not. And I'm still out there every week. So I'm loving it.
And I mean, you obviously do have a great enthusiasm for it. Can you put into words what is it that you personally get from it? What is so good about, you know, junior handling?
Well, I guess it's the fact that I am doing fairly well in it that keeps me out there.
Mm.
But I've got a lot of good friends that also do junior handling, and it's just fun. We go out there and we help each other with different dogs, and it's just like a hobby that I just love. And I guess you could say I'm fairly competitive sometimes, but I love it. And yeah, we just have our little sort of group thing, and we see each other every weekend, and we have fun out there with each other's dogs, and it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, even if you're not winning, you're still getting to spend time with some great dogs, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, it's great.
Well, listen, when you come over to Crufts, you will let us know, won't you?
Yes, definitely.
Good. It'd be lovely to meet up.
Okay.
Are you competing this weekend as well?
We actually had a show today, and there was a heat which had the points in it, and I was lucky enough to win today.
Oh, wow.
I won with an English Springer Spaniel, so.
Oh, brilliant. Well done.
Yeah. Thank you.
So we left Jasmine to celebrate her latest win. It was lovely to talk to a youngster so enthusiastic and knowledgeable. To find out more, you can go to Jasmine's page on the Bushman site via the link on the Dogcast site. Let's hope 2007 is another successful year for her. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Oh, the saddest of sights in a world of sin is the little lost pup with his tail tucked in. Arthur Gutterman.
And now for 2 Minute Fiction. Strategy, written by Julie Hill and read by Kate Coldham.
I've always loved the Bull Mastiff breed. I can't remember what got me starting liking them, but I'll never forget the first one I actually owned. He was beautiful. I called him Hercules because I wanted him to grow up big and strong. I was very young, but I took having my own dog very seriously. I put a lot of time and effort into training Hercules, because I knew that when he was fully grown, he would be too strong a dog to cope with otherwise. Although when he was an adult, he was certainly very well behaved. People were often afraid of him. Bull Mastiffs have such cross-looking faces, and when you put that face on such a bulky body, it can make people nervous. In reality, Hercules was a big softy, but I have to admit it gave me a thrill to have such a magnificent beast at my side who commanded such respect. As I say, I was young when Hercules came into my life, and I liked the idea of having such a large, fearless protector around. But I soon formed the opinion that he was a coward. If we were in the house and Hercules heard a suspicious noise outside, he would immediately become silent. He would merge into the shadows, and not even tap his claws on the floor. It was like he was trying to hide from any baddies who might be around. Now, no one likes an endlessly barking dog, but it did irk me that my dog refused to even issue one warning bark. I adored him nonetheless, and even entered him into a few local dog shows, where he did very well. I began to dream of bringing more Bull Mastiffs into my life, and even being a successful breeder one day. Still, Hercules' behaviour belied his great size and strength, and he froze at the first sign of danger. I had no idea of how much I had to discover about my dog, and the breed as a whole, but one night I began to learn. Hercules and I were taking a late-night walk in the park, when suddenly a tall stranger loomed up ahead. He asked me what the time was, and while I glanced at my watch, I was aware that Hercules had disappeared as usual. It was late and dark, and I had a sudden stab of fear. What if this man intended to attack me? When I looked up from my watch, the stranger had moved closer, and he bent over to look at my watch too. He was standing so close to me now, and I was totally alone with him in this deserted park. He was growing impatient, and I was too frightened to speak, so he reached out his hand and took hold of my arm to look at my watch for himself. Then suddenly, he was gone. It was a blur to me because he pulled my arm slightly and it spun me around, and when I turned back, he had just gone. Then I heard panting, and looking down I saw his inert form on the ground, with Hercules sitting proudly on top of him. with the huge weight of my dog resting on him. The man could barely breathe, let alone move. He gasped and whispered to me to call my dog off. I called Hercules and he immediately came to me, while the man scrambled to his feet and ran away. I don't think he even heard the heartfelt apology I called after him. My legs were shaking as I walked home, and I set about investigating what had happened. I read around and found out that Hercules had been governed by instinct all these months and that night in the park. Bull Mastiffs were used by gamekeepers for many years. Their job was to patrol the estate with their master, protecting the game birds from poachers. If a poacher was detected, the gamekeeper wanted to catch him red-handed. So rather than wanting a dog who barked and scared off intruders, he wanted a dog that would, on a given signal, approach silently, knock the offender to the ground, and then have enough weight to hold him down until the gamekeeper himself could take over. Hercules wasn't a coward. He was simply doing what came naturally. After that, I researched my favourite breed more thoroughly and was always sure to put Hercules into a down if I thought there was any chance he might try a flying rugby tackle again. Now I've been breeding Bull Mastiffs for many years, but I never stopped learning about them. Each dog teaches me new things about this dignified, stately breed. But I will never forget Hercules, how badly I misinterpreted him, and how valuable a lesson he taught me.
And that was Strategy, written by Julie Hill and read by Kate Coldham.
No louder shrieks to pitying heaven are cast when husbands or lapdogs breathe their last. Alexander Pope. If your dog was stolen, how long would you keep looking for him? Justine Marlowe has been searching for her Yorkshire Terrier, Alfie, for 3 years, and she's determined to continue for as long as it takes.
It was a Wednesday, the 19th of May 2004, and it was a hot day, which was actually unusual. And I went out with 8 dogs. I had 5 of my own, and I had my friend's dogs with me, and my dad, and we decided to have a picnic. So we went to a regular spot, which is a nature reserve, and we'd been there for about an hour. The dogs had the roast chicken. We were fine, everything was fine, and the tide was coming in, so the dogs had a paddle. And then Sapphire, my little Yorkie, and Alfie were underneath the tree where the water dish was. And I was playing ball with the other dogs.
Yeah.
Because they don't particularly play ball or anything like that. And then it was a bit bizarre. I mean, it was all open space. And there's a path that goes past which hikers use. I mean, you wouldn't be there unless you're either bird watching, hiking, or walking your dogs.
Yeah.
It was about 2 miles away from the car park. But anyway, Sapphire came up to me, and I thought, hold on, something's not quite right, because it just wasn't like her. So I started making my way back to the picnic area and my dad. My dad had his back to the tree and the path. At the same time, 2 people walked past. Now, I had a German Shepherd with me, and he sometimes can be a little bit overprotective. So I restrained him. So I had my head down whilst I held his collar.
Of course,
Let the two people pass. Started making my way back, which only took a couple of minutes. I couldn't find Alfie. So I started just doing what you normally do and just running around frantically thinking he's somewhere and he's just not acknowledging me. You know, you just don't think, I didn't think he'd been stolen. And I started searching, but then getting frantic. I mean, if you can imagine... being on a beach with children and all of a sudden you can't see one and the panic. And of course, when I realised that he'd been stolen, the people, they just weren't, I couldn't see them. Now, what we think happened was, because this particular day I actually went a little bit further than normal. It was all open space and they would have seen me. The people would have known I was with the dogs. But I actually went, I was possibly slightly further than I would normally. And I think Alfie and Sapphire might have gone onto the path, consequently coming towards me. And he would have just rolled over for a fuss and a tummy tickle. And they just picked him up. Or whether or not they were after Sapphire. But she wouldn't allow herself to be approached. But Alfie's a little bit more friendlier. And it took 10 minutes, and that's all it took.
So what did you do then, once you realised that, you know, he was stolen?
Well, after about 15 minutes and I realised that there's no way he was there, you know, we phoned the police. And we told them all the information, and of course, because I hadn't seen him being picked up, they didn't do anything. And I didn't know what, because I've never actually gone further past this point ever before. The dog knew the area extremely well. And if, which it isn't the case, but you imagine all sorts of things, but if Alfie decided to go back, he would have gone back to the car. But he's never done that before either. I mean, he's very, my dogs are very, very close to me. And we phoned the police and they did nothing. And we were there for about an hour and a half searching. And then I had to take the other dogs back and my dad, because they'd run out of drinking water for them. So I went home and that was horrible, walking back without him. Took the dogs back and then I came back out again, searching, searching, put handwritten posters up. And then came back, fed the dogs, and then I spent the entire night there in the pitch black. Just me, just hoping and waiting and, you know, just, and I went there every morning at 5 o'clock as soon as it was light. And every night when it got dark. But I knew he hadn't, I knew he wasn't there. But it was just, I didn't want to lose. Or leave him. There's always possibly that chance he might have been. You just don't believe that someone's going to just pick up your dog in the middle of nowhere. But they did.
And that's as much as you know, is it?
Yeah.
And how old was he at the time that he went?
He was just over 3.5 years old.
So he's got a lot of life left, hasn't he?
I mean, he was... He was recently been groomed, he was castrated, he, you know, microchipped, had a proper collar and dog tag on. I mean, it was obvious he was somebody's pet. And like I said, the details are on because every morning when I take them out, every day when I take them out, I make sure that the tags are on there. It's something I do. I mean, to have a dog stolen, but to have a dog stolen to me, because I'm just so careful, because I have quite a few dogs. I just couldn't believe it, and it was devastating. And I didn't have a computer, I've never used a computer then, so it was paying people, the printer, to put the posters up, driving around. You know, I lost 2 stone in 2 months. I lost my hair. It just, day in, day out, when I wasn't actually putting posters up, I was sitting there on my bed with the telephone books and just sending the posters out to every single vet in Kent, paying for publicity in the newspapers, radio, begging people. And then the days were spent just basically going all over Kent putting posters up.
The appalling thing is, if he's microchipped, he should be picked up by that system, shouldn't he? Somewhere, if he's taken into a rescue centre or a vet, he should be picked up. Well, this is what the conclusion you come to, but it should happen, shouldn't it?
Well, they took him for a reason. They wanted him. They didn't. There's all sorts of issues with dog theft, but with Alfie, I do believe that they took him because they wanted him, because they took a big risk. And, I mean, gosh, I was so... If I hadn't actually restrained the Alsatian, I'm pretty sure the Alsatian would have actually gone up and I would have got Alfie back. I'm pretty sure, because he was acting quite bizarre. And I think dogs have a sixth sense anyway. But regards to the microchipping, you'd think, okay, he's been gone, it'll be 3 years in May, won't it? And he's gone to a vet. But they don't scan. They just don't scan them. Now, if a dog warden had picked him up, the chances are I'd have him back by now. If the vet scanned on a regular routine basis, every single dog that went in, as a matter of, just as a matter of doing I would have had, I would have Alfie back. But vets don't do that. There are various reasons why that we feel that they should. But basically, we had a meeting a few weeks ago, and they just said that they can't. It's an infringement on people's privacy.
So why bother having the microchip? You know, you think the system is there to save the dogs. But if they're not going to implement it, then it's pointless, isn't it?
Well, quite. And this is what we're working hard to do, along with Let's Get Scanning.
Yes.
Which is a fantastic site, as you know.
Yes, yeah.
And the meeting we had was with Debbie from Let's Get Scanning. We had a dog warden there. We had the police there. And it was an extremely good meeting. And we met at my local vet.
Yes.
And and yes, they agree with it, but no, they won't do it. They won't do it. Unless, of course, the dog's been in an accident or been handed over to a dog warden or a rescue centre. But what about the people that steal the dogs because they want them?
Well, yeah.
You see, that's another thing as well. People think that I'll get my dog microchipped because the vets encourage it when the dog's a puppy. You're excited, you've got a new dog, you have it first injection, then you have it second injection. They encourage microchipping then. But then people just ignore it. They forget about it. I mean, dogs go missing. I think it's something like 25-30% that dogs actually go missing or and picked up. Can't be rehomed simply because the owner's moved home and not bothered to update the details with the chip company.
Which is just stupid, isn't it? Yeah.
And the dog ends up in a kennel. I mean, they're probably devastated, etc. But they don't think, like, I'm moving home, I'll change my TV licence, I'll change my driving licence, but they just don't bother with the microchipping.
Yeah.
And again, you get the people who are oblivious to what a microchip is. I mean, the amount of people I've spoken to, and they just basically said, well, isn't there something in the sky that circulates that can pick up the dog? And no.
No.
You've got to physically have the dog in with you.
You've obviously tried to turn what's happened to, you know, to you and Alfie into a positive. So tell us about Alfie's Lost Terriers.
The reason why I started Alfie Lost Terriers was because basically I did have him with various other sites. And I just found that the more I got into it, the more I knew I had to do something. And I was helping with the other sites, but Alfie was getting further and further and further down the page. Until eventually one site actually removed them altogether. And I thought, well, this is no good. The dog should be on there. It should be able to be priority. The more people update the site, inform us, the dog should be at the top of the list and should stay there and remain there until the day it comes home. Because dogs do come home after 6 years. Or more. And I just wanted to, it was a friend of mine who had been helping me with other things, and we just said, well, let's start it and see what happens. But I just knew I had to do something.
Yes.
That was, I mean, I was spending every single day and have done since the 19th of May 2004 anyway doing things and helping the local community in my town. And I was doing that sort of thing anyway. And I just thought, I've got to share my experience. You know, people need to talk to somebody. I had no one to talk to. Absolutely no one. And people need to talk. They need to cry. They need to talk to people that are also going through it. They need to know that there's light at the end of the tunnel. So consequently, we started this website, which we just thought it was going to be a little forum. But no, I mean, last year alone, and we're only just over 1 year old. But last year alone, we got 52 dogs back.
Brilliant.
Just through our site. And I just thought, well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's really good. Christmas Eve, I had a lady whose dog's been missing for 3.5 years, and she was suicidal, and she needed someone to talk to. She had no one. She phoned me, and we were on the phone for 2 hours. But she was laughing at the end of that conversation. And she's still with us now, and we're still looking for her dog. But people need to know that there are people out there that can help. By producing the posters, by doing the emailing, the vets, going out searching. Anything, getting publicity for the dog, and just so people just need to know that we're not all just out for a game or anything. We're out to help. Every member of our website has either experienced the same thing, or because of our website, they've actually got their dogs back. And once you've experienced it, you just can't help but go through it.
Yeah.
And I'll never give up looking for Alfie, and I'll never give up looking for any of these dogs on our site.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a really good job to fight this horrendous crime, and I really hope that you do get Alfie back.
Oh, I will. I'm determined. And you don't come on determined on me. But what we do need is as much publicity as we can possibly get, because, you know, there's so many websites nowadays. I mean, I never used a computer in my entire life. Somebody actually lent me one. And I self-taught myself. But I've got a jolly good team on board. And, I mean, Alfie's isn't just about lost and missing dogs. We're a site that's actually a lost and missing dog site, but we help dogs as well. That's dogs in need.
Yeah.
So if there's an old boy that needs rescuing or fostering, we put the word out. You know, it's anything to do with dogs. It's not just lost and stolen. But you've also got to remember, I've still got my dog missing. And every time I put a new dog missing on site, it makes me so sad. But it makes me more determined to get that dog back and help other people. And I share the same opinion as Karen, who's my colleague, Karen Archer, and other people on our site. Our webmaster, Mark, he had his dog stolen. He's got his dog back. Unfortunately, it was a fatality. But he's our webmaster now, and they know what the other people are going through, and that's the important thing. We know what they're going through.
And I really hope you get Alfie back. It's, I mean, it's horrendous.
I think the whole world will know when I get him back.
Yes, yeah.
But in the meantime, whilst I'm waiting, I'm still going to get the other dogs back.
A very moving story and a very determined lady. If you are coping with a missing or stolen dog and would like help, check out Alfie's Lost Terriers. There's a link on the Dogcast site. When Justine and Alfie are finally reunited, we will bring you the story. In the meantime, I'd like to wish Justine the very best of luck. My sunshine doesn't come from the skies. It comes from the love in my dog's eyes. Unknown.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Does your dog spend a lot of time hanging around for you to have time to do things? If your dog is often waiting for you to be ready, we've found a website that wants to hear his story. The Waiting Dog Registry is for the dog lover whose dog is forever waiting. And at waitingdog.org, the idea is to honour dogs based on service or behaviour rather than breed or lineage. You can register your dog and get a registration certificate, which can be customised to allow dog lovers to create a unique recognition or lasting eulogy for a canine friend.
For further inspiration, the website offers this. The Waiting Dog. Waits for your children to get home from school. Waits to join you on your next walk or hike. Waits to play and remind us of pure joy. Waits to comfort us when we are feeling low. Waits to be our companion, no matter what. Waits to protect you and your children from danger. Waits to help and assist the disabled. Waits to assist the hunt and put food on your table. Waits to work and herd your stock. Waits to search, rescue and save our lives. Waits to serve our military, our police and our firefighters. Waits to be rescued by you from abuse and abandonment. He waits to serve.
How nice. Make sure you don't wait too long before you register and tell the world your dog's story. In our last episode, we told you about researchers tracking dingoes and wild dogs in the Australian national parks. This subject was highlighted again recently when there was a dispute over whether or not the dingo should be listed as endangered. The Victorian Farmers Federation advises that any effort to protect the species would be devastating to farmers who need to prevent them attacking livestock. Currently, dingoes and wild dogs are considered to be pests and can be dealt with as such. However, dingo numbers are on the decline due to the fact that dingoes are crossbreeding with wild dogs. Farmers suggest that rather than listing the dingo as endangered, it would be better to control the wild dog numbers more effectively.
You've heard the phrase, hope the bedbugs don't bite. Well, in Des Moines, Iowa, there is a dog that can help make sure they don't get a chance. Tia, a young black Labrador, is a sniffer dog that reacts to those pesky parasites in the mattresses. This is a service that many organisations find useful, including hotels, college dorms, resorts, hospitals, nursing homes and residential homes. Tia is one of under 10 dogs in the US able to sniff out bedbugs, and her skills are on offer through United Detection Incorporated.
If you think bedbug detection is an unusual job for a dog, consider Rocket. He is a young Springer Spaniel who works in a park in Ontario, Canada. His job? Keeping geese away from the public. Rocket's task is to chase away birds without actually harming them in an effort to stop them covering the park with their droppings. Being chased by Rocket may not be great fun for the geese, but it's safer than trying to catch and relocate them. For Rocket, it's the perfect job, and I can imagine a long line of dogs who would do the job for free.
Maybe the birds over in the UK have heard of Rocket's antics and have taken revenge, because a dog walking path recently had to be closed after nesting eagle owls started attacking dogs who got too near their nest. The large birds of prey have set up home in Lancashire countryside, and things came to a head when a border collie was knocked off his feet by one of the pair. For the safety of all concerned, the path has been declared out of bounds until further notice.
I guess you could say that while one dog is enjoying a wild goose chase, others have been left owling. And that's all from today's Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
There once was a feisty young terrier who liked to bite girls on the derriere. He'd yip and he'd yap, then he'd leap up and snap. And the fairer the derriere, the merrier. Unknown. In his book, The Truth About Dogs, Stephen Bujanski asserts that dogs are parasites. In his opinion, it is pure myth that early man found the wolf a helpful hunting partner and a useful guard. He maintains that dogs have got a free evolutionary ride with humans. He adds, "Calling dogs parasites is fighting words, but what can I say? Dogs have got us exactly where they want us." You can find an extract from this book on the pbs.org site, and there's a link to it on the Dogcast site, where you can further explore the author's views. In fairness, Bujanski also tells us that he loves dogs and has one of his own, but he is still happy to see them as a social parasite. "It was interesting, intriguing, and irritating. I was outraged on my dog's behalf. I looked up several definitions of parasite. An animal or plant that lives in or on a host, another animal or plant. It obtains nourishment from the host without benefiting or killing the host." Okay, fair enough, my dog does get nourishment from me and doesn't kill me. But in honesty, I couldn't say he doesn't benefit me. Here's another one. An organism that grows, feeds, and is sheltered on or in a different organism while contributing nothing to the survival of its host. Again, true to an extent. But I would insist that my dogs make a huge contribution to my quality of life. Our dogs not only offer companionship and oblige us to daily exercise, there is proof that they improve our physical health and support our emotional well-being. A further definition offered, a parasite cannot live independently. This clearly is inaccurate when applied to canines. Wild dogs thrive without human help, and pet dogs are perfectly capable of independent life if they have the need forced upon them. I agree with Bujanski that treating dogs as humans is a huge mistake. But I would say the human-dog relationship is more a symbiotic one, a close relationship between two different species in which both species benefit. Far from contributing nothing and being a parasite, a parachute would better describe my dogs. As I am buffeted by life's ups and downs, it is often Buddy's presence that allows me to fall to the ground gently rather than suffer a fatal impact, and I suspect this is true for many dog owners. It is difficult to measure precisely how dogs enrich our lives, as there is no scientific device to record love, support, companionship, fun, and the joy of simply stroking or cuddling a dog. Yet this priceless bundle is the least they offer for their part of the bargain. That is why the relationship between the two species has endured so long, so strongly, and so constantly. If one of the species may be said to have the thin end of the wedge, I think it's not the humans, but the dogs. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922.
From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you get if you cross a dog and a kangaroo? A dog with somewhere to put his own lead.